translation. Sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune, and how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? This is spoken by Arjuna. Purport. According to Vedic injunctions, there are six kinds of aggressors. One, a poison giver. Two, one who sets fire to the house. Three, one who attacks with deadly weapons. Four, one who plunders riches. Five, one who occupies another's land. And six, one who kidnaps a wife. Such aggressors are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. Such killing of aggressors is quite befitting any ordinary man, but Arjuna was not an ordinary person. He was saintly by character, and therefore he wanted to deal with them in saintliness. This kind of saintliness, however, is not for a kshatriya. Although a responsible man in the administration of a state is required to be saintly, he should not be cowardly. For example, Lord Rama was so saintly that people even now are anxious to live in the kingdom of Lord Rama, Rama Raja. But Lord Rama never showed any cowardice. Ravana was an aggressor against Ram because Ravana kidnapped Rama's wife, Sita. But Lord Ram gave him sufficient lessons unparalleled in the history of the world. In Arjuna's case, however, one should consider the special type of aggressors, namely his own grandfather, own teacher, friends, sons, grandsons, etc. Because of them, Arjuna thought that he should not take the severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. Besides that, saintly persons are advised to forgive. Such injunctions for saintly persons are more important than any political emergency. Arjuna considered that rather than kill his own kinsmen for political reasons, it would be better to forgive them on grounds of religion and saintly behavior. He did not therefore consider such killing profitable simply for the matter of temporary bodily happiness. After all, kingdoms and pleasures derived therefrom are not permanent. So why should he risk his life and eternal salvation by killing his own kinsmen? Arjuna's addressing of Krishna as Madhava, or the husband of the goddess of fortune, is also significant in this connection. He wanted to point out to Krishna that as the husband of the goddess of fortune, he should not induce Arjuna to take up a matter which would ultimately bring about misfortune. Krishna, however, never brings misfortune to anyone, to say nothing of his devotees. Om Agyanati Niranjhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurindilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namasreshtam Manamapi Shaktiputram Atrasurupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Rupurim Makarim Goshadapim Radha Kundam Girigaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurantam Yatosmi Vandeha Shri Guru Vaishnavas, Vandeham Shri Guru Shiyatam Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavas Cha Shri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagana Raghuna Tanditam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Titam Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanditas Cha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada begins his purport to this verse by quoting in English from Manu Sanhita regarding six kinds of aggressors who, according to Manu, one can and should kill, contrary to modern law in most of the world. In some places in America, if someone enters your property, you're allowed to kill them. Someone unauthorizedly enters. In some states, that's that. So here are the six types, and if I'll read them again, and we can see that the Dhritarashtra, the sons of Dhritarashtra, had done all these things. Even one of these considerations is sufficient grounds to kill them, but they'd done all six. Number one, a poison guilt, because in youth, when he was just a young boy, Bhima had been poisoned by Duryodhana and company with the aim to kill him, but they failed. Then one who sets fire to the house, the whole scheme was set up to build a house made of flammable material that, what's the name of it, Vatavanarth, something like that. And the house was made nicely for the Pandavas by the Kauravas. Please come and live here very nicely. And when they'd been living there for a year, it was set ablaze. But the Pandavas were already warned of this, so they escaped. One who attacks with deadly weapons, well, they were about to do that, the Kauravas, and they had done that also in the kingdom of Virat. They had attacked. So Arjuna had fought with them. One who plunders riches by deceptive means, Duryodhana had taken away the whole kingdom of Yudhishthira. One who occupies another's land, and that's the same thing. Duryodhana was illegally occupying the land that belonged to, by right to Yudhishthira, and one who kidnaps a wife, so by foul means, actually there are no good means to do so, but by particularly foul means, Duryodhana had taken the wife of the Pandavas as their own property. So such persons are fit to be killed. And Arjuna is from the Kshatriya class, who are trained to kill, which is not very nice, but has to be done. Those who profess non-violence are living in a dream world. Interestingly, three of the most prominent people in recent times who have advocated non-violence and peace and love were all shot dead. Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and John Lennon. All of them spoke of peace and love and non-violence, and each one of them was shot dead, which is not very pleasant, and we don't condone that, but it just goes to show that it's not a very practical philosophy. The idea of peace is all very well, but if you say peace, 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 and then someone comes and attacks you and wants to spoil everything that you have, you should defend it. It doesn't make any sense to not defend it. Okay? In the name of we shall be peaceful, and then you're overrun by people who are not at all peaceful. It's for the sake of peace, someone is required to fight, because if extremely demoniac people take over, then there'll be non-stop pillaging and looting and raping, and there won't be any peace. So the Kshatriyas, they maintain a peace for others. And the Kshatriya nature is to take pleasure in that. They take pleasure in hearing and discussing about Kshatriya activities of valor. They're not ashamed of it. They're just like when Arjuna won Draupadi in the Swayambhu, then they at that time the Pandavas, they were dressed as if they were Brahmanas. They were in disguise because they'd run away from the house which was set on fire, and they were in disguise, incognito. So it appeared that Brahmanas had won the hand of Draupadi, and no one knew who they were. Well, Krishna, who they were, Balaram and Krishna, you know. So. That looks like Yudhishthira, that looks like Arjuna. Yeah, so, but they didn't bet on. So, Drupada sent his, one of his sons, Drushyadyumna, to follow these five Brahmana, unknown Brahmana boys who had come out of nowhere and taken the hand of Draupadi. We were saying, well, who will win the hand of Draupadi? Will it be Duryodhana? Will it be this one, that one? But it was some unknown Brahmana boys, and to find who, to ascertain who they are. So Dhritarashtra, sorry, not Dhritarashtra, Drushyadyumna, he followed them unseen, and from outside their cottage at night, as they were lying down to sleep, he heard them talking about, you know, weapons and wars and fighting. And these are Kshatriyas. Brahmanas don't talk like that. And then when they were called for the marriage ceremony, then again, Drupada set up tables with different things. On one table, he put weapons. On another table, he put books. And if they were Brahmanas, they should have gone and looked at the books, but they wouldn't have looked at the weapons. So they gave themselves away like this. So is to be a killer, someone who can kill others, it requires a whole culture and a whole attitude. Which Srila Prabhupada pointed out, the American boys who were being drafted in the Vietnam War at that time, they weren't Kshatriyas, they were Shudras. They're not fit for fighting. And we find that even the soldiers, they go to Afghanistan or Iraq or something and have a hand blown off, and they're traumatized for the rest of their life, or anyway they're traumatized and all things. But some real soldiers don't get traumatized. As in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains, there's one battle and there were rivers of blood flowing with heads and flowing and arms and legs, and squeamish people would have been, I'm paraphrasing here, squeamish people would have, or cowards would have been horrified to see that, but Kshatriyas, they would take pleasure in all this. So, of course, it's not that everyone who takes pleasure in killing is a Kshatriya. They also, demons, they also take pleasure in killing, but in a different attitude. Once I was on a train in Russia, and in the compartment was a was a man who was, he pulled out his penknife and he cut his bread and his sausages with his penknife. And the devotee who was accompanying me, a translator, told me that he was telling his friend that, you see, with this, he was a soldier who'd come back from Chechnya, and he said that, well, with this knife, you see, people who are like shot and squirming on the ground, I used to take out their, this knife, I've taken out so many people's eyes and cut out their ears. And he was taking pleasure in that. So real Kshatriyas don't do that kind of thing. You're just a demon, that's all. But real Kshatriyas, they take pleasure in, how I killed this one and that one. And I took the blow. And Srila Prabhupada writes that no Kshatriya comes back from a battle where he has to have some injury. It has to be, you have to show that you're really in the thick of it all. You don't just, you are, what is that? Hatvava prapshasi swargam jitvava bhokshase mahim. You go into a battle and either you're going to win and enjoy the earth, or you're going to die and go to heaven. So that's the attitude. Real Kshatriya attitude in fighting. So Arjuna, he his whole life had been talking about and training for and involved in, completely in the attitude of a Kshatriya. and glorified for that. They killed how many Nivatakavach and Nivatakavachas, these demons, 60,000 of Arjuna single-handedly killed them all, killing this one, killing that one. He went to the forest with Krishna for hunting and killing. His whole life was, well, not his whole life, but that was his main duty. He was born to kill and was glorified for doing so, to uphold dharma. So it wasn't that Arjuna was a wimp or a squeamish coward. He was quite used to killing, but in this circumstance, even though there are all grounds to fight, he didn't want to, because, well, there were all grounds to fight, but there was the contradiction also that the people he was up against were his family members, even though they had acted in the most dastardly ways possible for years together without any sign of any repentance whatsoever. But in the other party, there were also Bhishma especially was particularly extremely dear to all the Pandavas. Drona was their guru, and what a guru means in Vedic culture is we have very little idea of in the modern age, where people choose gurus like a pair of shoes or something like this. Oh, I like this one. No, I like that one. And especially, I mean, they had other, the Pandavas, they had Dhaumya as their family priest. And he and many others during their exile in the forest taught them spiritual knowledge, but Drona was their Astra Guru, the one who taught them how to fight, which for a Kshatriya, that's his very identity. So, and especially Arjuna and was very dear to Drona, and vice versa. And there are Brahmanas, of course, Drona himself being a Brahmana, his son Ashwatthama was there, Kripa was there, or Brahmanas, you're not supposed to fight against Brahmanas. Yeah. So, it was a dilemma for Arjuna, which Krishna solved by making him intelligent. That I was saying you should break all doubts by intelligence. So that is in Bhagavad Gita, Medhavi Chinna Sanshaya, one who is intelligent, cuts all doubts. Now in this purport, it's very interesting how Srila Prabhupada presents one side, and then another side, and then another side. Srila Prabhupada writes, such aggressors are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors. So it should be done. Such aggressors should be killed. So such killing of aggressors is quite befitting any ordinary man. But Arjuna was not an ordinary person. So first of all, it's presented that such people as the Kauravas, who had committed all these crimes, they should be killed. Manu says they should be killed. But Prabhupada says Arjuna was not an ordinary person. This does not apply to him, because he's extraordinary. He, Arjuna, was saintly by character, and therefore he wanted to deal with them, the Kauravas, in saintliness. So there's different consideration for Arjuna. He's saintly. Arjuna wasn't, he was thinking on a higher level than the ordinary person who is quite justified in killing aggressors. Then again, Prabhupada says, this kind of saintliness, however, is not for a Kshatriya. So, killing such persons is justified, but Arjuna was on a higher level. But, again, two buts, but, it's like a double minus becomes a plus. But this kind of saintliness is not for a Kshatriya. So it is saintly to want to forgive others and not want to kill them. But for a kshatriya, it's not saintly. For a kshatriya, it's saintly to kill for the sake of dharma. As Krishna will state later in Bhagavad Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya granya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata jishkritam dharma sansthapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna says, I come in every age. Whenever there is a decline in religion and an upsurge of irreligion, to deliver the saintly and to destroy, to kill the unsaintly, and in this way to establish dharma, I appear in every age. So Krishna comes to kill. And Arjuna, nimitta matra bhavasavya sachin. Krishna tells Arjuna that, yeah, I've come to kill all these people and you should be the instrument in this. So, well, that's another level, but killing is required for a kshatriya. It's not saintly for a kshatriya when he's faced with a particularly sinful person to excuse him. Mercy is a quality of a saintly person, but a kshatriya, he exhibits mercy in a way that is different from that of a brahmana. And even a brahmana, although he won't personally kill someone, generally speaking, but he will induce kshatriyas to do so. Because it's just like, just something came to my mind out of how many thousands of things have I read in newspapers. What do you get from reading newspapers every day? Well, some years ago at Los Angeles International Airport, there was in the Et Al line, the Israeli Airlines line, someone came up and started shooting indiscriminately and killing people. I was just in LA at the time, just arrived myself. I wasn't in the airport at the time, but I just arrived. I just arrived the same day or something. He went on shooting indiscriminately and killing Jews until an airport security guard shot him dead. Shot the shooter. So that is a case where no one would fault the security guard. Rather, he did his duty. And if he'd failed, if he'd had the opportunity to do so, but he didn't do, he might have been faulted for that. Of course, if he could have disarmed him, that would have maybe been better according to law, so that he could go for trial and all this. But if in the name of mercy, oh, well, you know, we don't want to kill him, and in the meantime he's going on killing so many other people, and that would be considered bizarre by any sane person. Where does your non-violence go in that case? What are you doing? You believe in non-violence, and there's a person indiscriminately killing others, and you have a gun, and you're paid to maintain law and order, or to keep the security, and you fail to restrain that person in the name of non-violence. It's bizarre. It's ridiculous. Violence is required of certain persons. And the policeman holding a gun or the security guard in the airport holding a gun, no one begrudges that, because it's known that that's required. They have a job to do. That gun is there for first of all as a deterrent, and then if it doesn't deter others, then for those it doesn't deter from vritahimsa, that is meaningless violence, one of the qualities of, or one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, if someone does such a wild thing as to start indiscriminately shooting people, then that person should be himself shot. So, for a kshatriya to be non-violent is irreligious, it's adharma. His dharma is to protect others, and to protect others means to exert violence as necessary. So, killing of aggressors is authorized, but Arjuna was on a higher level, he was in saintly consciousness, but is then, so, yes, this is the position, aggressors should be killed, but Arjuna is saintly, and therefore, but that is not saintly. Again, Prabhupada is taking from different perspectives. For a kshatriya to not fight and not kill where, in a situation where he is required to, that is not saintly. So where are we going with this purport here? An example is given of Lord Ram. Ram is praised for chastising Ravana. And then in Arjuna's case, however, one should consider the special type of aggressors, namely his own grandfather, own teacher, friends, sons, grandsons, etc. So what have we got here? We've got a special case. Arjuna, so again it says, because Arjuna was a kshatriya, he should not claim saintliness to avoid the fight. But again, there's another consideration. It's all quite complex, isn't it? That these are special types. I mean, they are aggressors, but at the same time, they are persons who are very dear. Swajanam, that word is used in Arjuna says here. And they are our own sabha, friends of Vritra. So they're very dear. Apart from being very dear, that might not be an excuse or whatever, because it's said that in the a kshatriya, or a one who is actually dedicated to justice, in a matter of law, he will treat his own son and his enemy's son equally. So that if his enemy's son is, if there's a disagreement and it comes to judgment, there's a disagreement between his enemy's son and his own son, and his enemy's son is right and his own son is wrong, then someone who's actually qualified to dispense justice and to judge, he will judge in favor of the enemy's son, because justice stands above what would otherwise be nepotism. Simply favoring people because they're your friends, or chamchagiri, as it's called in Hindi. It's just your friends, and you just favor them because they're your friend. And they're your friends because they help you in corruption, and you help them, and that's how things run on. So, this is a special case. But that shouldn't have been a consideration. But then when you see Guru is there, the Gurus are the Bhishma and Drona are Gurus. Drona was actually the Guru in the sense of having specifically taught the fighting art to the Pandavas and to the Kauravas. They were all in the same school. Bhishma is also a guru. He hadn't at that point systematically taught them anything, although later, after the battle, he would teach Yudhishthira systematically about the principles of dharma, and of course the other Pandavas were present there. And Krishna was also there, learning about dharma from Bhishma. But Bhishma is guru in the sense of being the grandfather, senior. So they're also called gurus, seniors, mother, father. The first guru, according to the Shastra, is the mother, not the father. So these are all seniors. There's special circumstances. There's some special circumstances. So because they were special people, they had a special relationship with Arjuna. Arjuna thought that he should not take severe steps necessary against ordinary aggressors. And after all, the Brahmins, blood relations. So there's some special consideration. Again, they should be killed, but Arjuna was saintly, so he didn't want to kill them. But then he's a Kshatriya, so he should kill them. But then again, there's special consideration because they are special people. So there's some. So this way and that way, it's like a court case is going on. And Arjuna, of course, he was aware of all these principles, and in his mind, these things must have been going back and forth. Yeah, that yes, they're aggressors, therefore they should be killed. But actually, we should have a higher consideration. But then, Kshatriya should kill. But then, these are special people. So, like this, the dilemma is the internal dilemma that is going on. And then he thinks, what are we doing this all for anyway? Anyway, it's just for winning the kingdom, and that's just some mundane thing. Why are we so concerned with that? Which is Arjuna's misunderstanding again, because, oh, for various reasons, because from the Varnashram viewpoint, the Kshatriya has to have a kingdom, ultimately, the Pandavas asked, well, just give us 5 villages. If you're not going to give us, actually, you should give the whole kingdom. We're willing to give you half, even though you don't really have a right to it. But Duryodhana said, well, no. And then they came down, well, just give us at least 5 villages so we can execute our Kshatriya Dharma of being kings of somewhere. And Duryodhana famously said that he would not give them as much land as into which a pin could be placed. So then, so Arjuna is thinking that we're fighting to get a kingdom so that we can enjoy it, which is actually that's Duryodhana's outlook, but it wasn't. It was Yudhishthira clearly said that it's not that I want land to enjoy it, but I can't execute my duty as a Kshatriya unless I have something to, I have to have some place to rule over. Above that, there was Krishna's consideration that he had come to the world to rid it of demons, and this whole battle was arranged to bring all the demons together and wipe them all out. And Arjuna was to be an instrument in this. So there are various considerations back and forth. Now, this point that Arjuna is saintly and therefore he doesn't want to fight, well, that is, to be saintly, that is, of course, to be a devotee is a transcendental consideration. Later on, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will describe some of the qualities yomad bhakta same priyaha that make that endear the devotee to him, the devotional qualities. And Krishna said, the first Krishna says in the list of those qualities are Advaishta Sarva Bhutanam Maitra Karana Eva Cha. To be non-envious toward all living beings, and to be friendly to them and merciful to them. But at the same time, while saying this, Krishna is exhorting Arjuna to fight. So how, where's that advaishta, no absence of bad feeling toward others? But you're going to fight someone and kill them. How are you going to do that without some bad feeling? Actually, it is possible for a kshatriya to do so, as we see in the case of Bhima, after he killed, I believe it was Vikarna, is one of the Dhritarashtras, one of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Now, Vikarna, because in that whole assembly where the atrocity, the Asat Sabha, the gambling match, among all the atrocities, the worst of all, and the one which brought all misfortune to Duryodhana and company, was the insulting of Draupadi. So no one wanted to speak up in that assembly. Bhishma, he wouldn't, when appealed to by Draupadi, is this dharma that I am dragged here by my hair in this condition? And Bhishma just waffled and said that, well, you know, dharma is very subtle and it's very difficult to ascertain. But Vikarna, who's one of the sons of Dhritarashtra, one of the brothers of Duryodhana, stood up and said, yes, this is a dharma. And what are all you people, you're supposed to be great authorities and greatly respected people and protecting the people. Why are you tolerating this? So Vikarna, he was actually a good guy on the wrong side. By fate, he was on the wrong side. So he fought with Duryodhana's forces, and he fought as well as he could. Bhima had vowed to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra, all of the Duryodhana and all his brothers. So he did that, one by one. Tick them off. This one gone, that one gone. The last one was Duryodhana himself. So after killing Vikarna, who was actually a good guy, but as in fighting on, then Bhima circumambulated his body in respect that this is actually, he's actually a good person. He's died in a manner suitable for a kshatriya. So Bhima was full force, fought with him and killed him, but at the same time he respected him as a saintly person. So we see that it is possible to fight without hatred, but simply as a matter of duty. I mean, that requires a much internal detachment. These martial arts that's based on, or that's inculcated, that you learn how to fight and you can kill others, but you don't fight unless it's necessary. So it's not just you become a hooligan or something like this. The qualities are of self-control even are imparted, that even though you can do it, you can kill others, but you don't. You reserve that ability until it's necessary. So, this what's going on here, to be saintly, to not be saintly, an understanding of what is saintliness is required. There is the ultimate transcendental platform where one is completely aloof from the world. And examples of that are Vankshidas Babaji Maharaj, Gorkishor Das Babaji Maharaj. But even they observed some principles of the world. I mean, mostly they didn't go naked, is one. And another thing is, they had no association with women, which for renunciants is ha hanta hanta vishabhakshanato pyasadhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that for a renunciant to associate with women is worse than drinking poison. So they observed that, and not much else. I mean, even in terms of Vaishnava principles, neither of them had a japa mala. Bhaktisiddhas didn't chant rounds systematically. They were absorbed in Krishna, which is the perfection of life. But they were not acting as teachers to the world, except by their most exalted example, but they weren't teaching others how to come to that platform. They were showing what the actual platform was. But for preaching Krishna consciousness, we cannot be like Gaur Kishore. Anyway, we can't be like Gaur Kishore. But if we try to imitate that, like, you know, someone has a steel plate, someone has a plastic plate, and Gaur Kishore eats out of a human skull. So that's not a regular part of the Bhakta program. You want to join the Bhakta program? Okay, bring your own skull and go dig one up. So, they are purely on the platform of devotion, the Bhagavata platform. But almost all devotees, and especially those who are to teach others, they observe some principles of the world, which can conflict with those of pure devotion. Principles of the world in Vedic society, that means varnashram. But ultimately Vaishnavism is beyond varnashram, but still devotees in general, unless they are avadhut, like Gaur Kishore or Bhaktisiddhas Babaji, they follow standard principles, and many of the principles in varnashram are the same as in Krishna consciousness. Just like rising early, every member of Vedic culture does that. Whether they're a karmi, gyani, yogi or bhakta, everyone should rise early, bathe, and engage in prescribed duties, which early in the morning, especially spiritual, directly spiritual activities are there. So everyone should respect the cow, everyone should respect the brahmanas and the gurus and elders. So Vaishnavas, they follow all these things also, as long as they do not conflict with rules of bhakti. So Arjuna thought that this fighting would conflict with the ultimate goal of life, but Krishna said, no, you got it wrong, because I want this fight for you in all respects, even considering yourself materially as a kshatriya, or considering yourself as my servant, Arjuna, you should fight. So this worldly duties and ultimate duties, we can see that Arjuna was confused as to which to follow, how to follow, what does it mean to be a devotee living in this world, and that confusion can be there for any devotees, especially in the extremely confused situation in the world today. What should we do? What to do in various given situations can be confusing. Just like, within our movement, it's an ongoing, not really a debate, but a disagreement between different devotees, different members of our movement, as to the role of women within the movement. And the official line is that, well, everyone's a devotee, so everyone should serve Krishna in all respects, which is the highest principle, that everyone should have all opportunities to serve Krishna in all ways. So that transcends any bodily consideration, and we're not the body. But then there are bodily considerations also, just like we see that Krishna expected Arjuna to fight in the battle. He didn't expect Mother Yashoda to come and fight in the battle, although in the modern age, the poor women, they get sent to the battle also, or for that matter, he didn't send any Brahmins to fight in the battle. Brahmanas must have been there also for performing rituals and pujas and all that kind of, and Brahmins, they must have been there, but they weren't fighting. Shudras, there must have been so many Shudras there also. Brahmanas there for cooks and maybe, and Shudras for all kinds of things. And for looking after the horses and carrying water, there must have been a whole operation. And for every soldier, there are probably at least 5 or 6 non-fighting members of each contingent. But it was they all had to do their duty, but Krishna called Arjuna to fight. So there are different considerations in terms of the body, the mentality, specific duties, specific things that some people can do and others can't. Arjuna could fight. Mother Yashoda wasn't fit for fighting. Even though she was very dear to Krishna, she had another duty to do. So they both pleased Krishna, but Svei Svei Karma, what is that? Svei Svei Karma Nyabhirata Sangsisim Labhate Naraha. By their specific work or their specific duties which they were called upon to do. So, 5,000 years later, there are still divisions in human society, divisions of mentality. It's very confused at the present time in terms of Varnashram, because it's often difficult to understand who's... Well, it's easy to understand, everyone's a Shudra, but among those, some exhibit to some extent some Brahminical qualities. Kshatriyas, where's the word, the Kshatriya? Who are they? Vaishyas, well, there are people who like to make money. There's some kind of perverted reflection of a Vaishya. And a perverted reflection of Brahmanas means all people making up theory, all kinds of atheistic and speculative theories. Roles are all mixed up. And in the modern age, the roles of men and women are all mixed up also. And even in dressing, you can't... It's often you look at something, you don't know, is that a male or a female? It's difficult to work out, whereas in traditional society, the roles were quite distinct. Dress also is quite distinct. Women dress like women and men dress like men, and it's not all the same. So they're very distinct and different roles, but that's not there. Some things are still there. I mean, still women are giving, they're having babies and men aren't, and that's not likely to change. You never know what the scientists will come up with, their amazing discoveries, but so far men haven't been clamoring to give birth, and as far as I know, no one's doing any research into, well, they can have a sex change operation, but they can't give birth. Anyway, there's still a pronounced difference in that particular function. And in all traditional cultures, women are encouraged to develop motherly qualities, which are different to male qualities. They have a different role to play. So, now I'm making a case, which I've made many times before, but I'm just pointing this out, how in this purport Srila Prabhupada addresses the conflict of interest that Arjuna found himself in. He wasn't sure, should I act like a kshatriya or should I act like a devotee? And he didn't seem to realize, and later on Krishna clarified that, that yes, you act as a devotee by doing what you're supposed to do for me, instead of trying to do something which you think you should do, which you think that would be saintly to do, something that you think would be better, but you are expert in doing this, you are trained for this, you are meant for this, and I want you to do this, therefore you should do it. So there was actually no grounds for confusion, but because Arjuna had an idealized and imperfect understanding of what it meant to be a devotee, therefore Krishna explained to him how he should act in this situation. So these varnashram duties and devotional duties, they can be in conflict. That can be there. Just like in varnashram, one may be expected to worship demigods, but then a devotee is not supposed to worship demigods. Although in some cases Krishna may direct a devotee to approach demigods, as he did in the case of Arjuna. But the general injunction is Ma me kam sharanam raja, to take shelter only of Krishna, which is possible to do, even if one does approach various demigods, if he does so on Krishna's order. So overall the situation is somewhat complex. But the general idea that, well, we should just act on the transcendental platform without any consideration of worldly circumstances or differences, well, that's not accepted by Krishna, nor is it very practical. So there's a few points. Of course, this, having brought up some complex topics, it requires a nuanced discussion, but anyway, it could be a big discussion, but I'm just bringing it up for all of you to think about. You're supposed to think about what we read in Shastra, not just read like parrots. So just think about these topics, try and understand them, and what are the nuances. But it's not just a matter of trying to understand and philosophically consider, but we have to act also. So we have to make some decision. But that decision should be based on a mature and deep understanding of Shastric knowledge and how to apply that in the world. The whole point of Bhagavad Gita, for all the philosophy, it's all meant to be applied. It's not armchair philosophy. So all these points should be discussed and understood. If the members of the Krishna Conscious Movement are to do what Srila Prabhupada wanted them to do in the respect of actually being brahmanas who are fit to guide the whole human society, it means they have to be extremely qualified in understanding Shastra and its application. So, my understanding is that just to say that everyone should do everything because we're all spiritual is inappropriate and not very realistic. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. Now, unless, I mean, there may be many questions, but we'll take one or two. Anyone has any questions, comments, or protests? Speak now or forever hold thy peace.
Maharaj, can I ask a question that's not related to what you spoke about?
Let's see first if there are any questions related to what I did speak about. Okay? Yes. Yeah, please.
I'm sorry about the chair for a small knee problem, so I feel bad that you're sitting.
It's all right. You're forgiven. We won't curse you this time. Drunk owes you anything.
Thank you.
You can sit on, you're now for the rest of your life absolved from all excuses for sitting on a chair. Blanket absolution. Okay.
We tend to think of Kali Yuga as a time when all the qualities in general are mixed up. We can see, you know, I know from reading your books, and I can understand it totally, that you say, well, if women are good managers, they can be managers in their home.
Mm.
They can, you know, be gurus for the children.
Mm.
So it works out perfectly like that. But I was wondering about, you know, that story where Draupadi, when Bhishma is dying on the bed of arrows, she comes and she says to him, you know, now your reaction for that time when you didn't act to... And Trivikram Swami was explaining one time that he was reading, or he made some comment on that. I don't know if he was exactly reading that passage or what it was. And he said her reaction was a little bit due to the fact that she was a Kshatriya. So that surprised me a little bit, because I thought even back then there was like women who had Kshatriya natures. So how did they...
Women with Kshatriya natures.
Or born in a Kshatriya family.
Yeah. Kshatriyani. Yeah, well, certainly to be born in a Kshatriya family, they would imbibe the qualities just by the very culture and the atmosphere. And they would, the Kshatriya would want a wife who would be, who would have the same aims as them, like a Vaishya wife in the Vaishyas, they're mostly interested in making money, especially in the modern age. And you can see in India even now, although it's all breaking down, that in the Vaishya families they have a certain kind of culture. Even though it's said that women are not educated officially, I've seen in... I went once in Srirangam and we visited a Rigvedi Gurukul, and the boys were chanting the mantras, and then they're forgetting, and the wife was coming out of the kitchen and helping them with the mantras, because she knew, she'd heard them all so many times that she knew them all also. So it's not that the Brahmina women are uneducated, but they just get it in a different way and may not have it so systematically. And actually that's stated after coming home, after marrying, the boy is supposed to teach his wife, who would generally be a young girl, but just a child by modern considerations. He has to teach her what he learned in the Gurukul. So he might not give her the whole 14, 15 years of it. He'd give this summary, and then and growing up in that atmosphere, living in that atmosphere, they would imbibe that also. So, yeah, women, they are supposed, the marriage is made generally in the traditional system. A Brahmin will marry a girl from a Brahmana family because they're raised in that culture, they know what they have to do, but if they happen to marry in another family, then they have to, they're supposed to adjust themselves also. So, what was the question actually?
How would, traditionally, if a woman was born with a Kshatriya nature, as in the instance with Draupadi.
Draupadi, fiery nature.
Yeah.
But she had a forgiving nature also, didn't she?
As
with Ashwatthama, she didn't.
Yeah.
At first she wanted that he should be killed, but then when it came to the point, she said, well, she was thinking of Kripi, his mother, that she should not lament as I am lamenting. So she had that compassion also, which Arjuna is showing at this point, which Krishna says is inappropriate for Arjuna, that kind of compassion.
Yeah.